Mini episode 542 of the FDH Lounge is brought to you by The Unheard Scene, your home for great music interviews of all stripes. Follow them on the web at unheardscene.com.
The FDH Lounge. You want to schedule your life around it.
A long time ago, on a gloomy, wet Cleveland spring night, two men stand alone amidst the late night drizzle. Their voices echo across the vacant station parking lot as they debate the merits of the great American radio show that have been missing for far too long. On that night, an idea was born. That idea became the FDH Lounge. Welcome to the FDH Lounge.
All right, everybody, welcome to the FDH Lounge. This is part 1E, the culmination of part 1 of our History of Royal Rumble series. With Kyle Ross, I am Rick Morris. We are the FDH Lounge dignitaries breaking this all down for you. 1992, spoiler alert, it's the greatest Royal Rumble of all time.
That's why we're calling this the beginning to the best.
Yes, building to the best one here. Before we even get started, I just have to say this to put you over.
I was hoping you were going to bring this up. When I was driving over here today, I was like, I wonder if he's going to reference this.
Oh, yeah. There's no way that I'm not going to reference this. We did this off air recently, or not today, but fairly recently. And
we were filming, we were taping the football, what do we call them? Our
NFL look back, look ahead.
Yes,
for,
okay,
for 2014, 2015. You said that you had watched this so many times you thought you could name all 30 guys in order. So we set about checking that. I pulled up the Wikipedia page. We got to 11, 12, 13, and you said, I know it's these three guys. I think this was the order. You got 11 and 12 juxtaposed, which means you got 29 out of 30
which
right.
Was Repo Man and Greg Valentine, two inconsequential guys. Yes. I know me, the Royal Rumble 1992.
Yeah.
I know me
I mean, we all need our niche in life, and that is yours.
That was pretty amazing that I did that. Pretty sad.
You are the world's foremost expert. Well, I will tell you that.
I can actually see, like, I didn't even need to rewatch it to do this. Like, I can just see the match in my head, almost.
Yeah.
Like, I can see how you always, I know you've always been critical of how they don't remember history in these things. Well, I can see the camera panning to Ric Flair when Kerry Von Erich comes out. It's almost as if they were saying, yes, remember how great Christmas night 1982 was.
All right. So
I remember Bobby Heenan yelling, damn it, when Ric Flair came out.
Yeah.
I remember DiBiase's reaction to being thrown out early. I remember Flair's face when Roddy Piper comes out.
Well,
Jake Roberts hiding when Randy Savage comes out. I can remember this all in my head.
Well, and I tell you, too, they for the first time, they started to leverage history a little bit more with this match. It was referenced that Davey Boy Smith had won a Battle Royal in London just
little
a few months
like
earlier.
Little things like that are helpful. I like that.
That's all I'm saying. Just because
he came out at
stuff.
Number one.
Yeah, Monsoon referenced that DiBiase and Valentine both went very long in 91 and that Martel had... He had to mention this, the Iron Man feat from the previous
because they
year.
Were, yeah, they were, using, yeah, they were using that to set up
the Flair thing. The first that they started to leverage their own history, which I appreciate.
And keep in mind, they actually had several Rumbles under their belt, too.
Yeah, true.
So.
True. But the undercard, nothing to write home about. We're going to kind of breeze through this because it was pretty much a one-match show. I referenced during the 91 Rumble.
I think
Rumble,
a case could be made that this is, of every pay-per-view ever done in WWE.
Uh-huh.
I don't think there's ever, you know, there have been other one-match shows.
The Canadian Stampede says hi.
Yep, and I think that's the only one that can make an argument with this, whereas
okay,
it's just it's just one match.
Yeah, pretty much.
This is more famous than the... I know the Canadian Stampede, look, it's awesome.
Yeah.
It means a lot to a lot of people.
Yeah.
But this is a more famous match.
The quote unquote work rate showcase match at the top of the card here, Orient Express New Foundation.
I don't understand why you're like you think that they were.
I'm just jaded about that.
I just think that they just put a tag team match on. That's all they did.
Well, it's just like if you're gonna put the Orient Express in this spot, push it. Look, I liked the Orient Express. I wanted them to be higher on the card, but OMG, short guys. You know that's how that works. So
you wanted them to be pushed for the Orient Express.
Absolutely, sure. Yeah, because I thought they were pretty good workers, even if your expectation for what I was going to find with Orient Express Rockers in 91 was higher than I thought. But, good workers, well above average, especially for that point in time. used to get the new foundation over a tag team, which would not go anywhere.
Yeah, I mean, Owen Hart was singles by a single guy by WrestleMania 8. They fired Neidhart pretty quickly after this.
Yes, they did. Beverly's Bushwhackers, an atrocity, as you would expect.
Oh, my God, I forgot about that.
Yeah.
That's so bad.
But here's the purpose that it serves, you know, the strainer effect. Let's get these chodes out of the Royal Rumble and help make it the most star-studded ever. So in that sense, it served its purpose. We didn't have to be subjected to those four.
That's another reason you had tag teams, is because no tag team was going to win the world title match. So you had to have all tag team stuff. That's another thing, too.
There were still some tag wrestlers, I believe, that were in the Rumble, but not many. Well, you're putting a gun to my head off the top of my head.
I don't think there was a single tag team guy in that match. Oh, there was one Nasty Boy. There was one it was weird.
Yeah.
It was weird. In this Rumble and in 91, they only had one of the two Nasty Boys in each of them.
Yeah.
And it was different ones. Brian Knobbs got it in 91, Jerry Sags in 92.
Maybe Sags was just late to come out from his 91 spot.
Yeah, I don't know.
Okay, well, that...
That's it. Well, other than that, though, there were no real
also,
tag wrestlers.
Well, there was a third one because the booking was weird because they were in a weird place in the company at the time. Disaster's LOD for the tag team titles, they do a deal where LOD loses by count out, but they're celebrating in the ring afterwards. Not a proto babyface move here.
It was weird.
To celebrate keeping your titles on a technicality.
Remember, though, what happened after this. This is the first Royal Rumble, we should point out, as meaningless as the undercard generally is.
Yeah.
We should point out that it's the first undercard where they had both an Intercontinental and tag title match.
That's true.
So,
worth noting.
So remember the booking of the tag team picture at this point. The tag team division certainly had taken a huge hit by the start of 92. But they were about ready to do that thing where Money Inc. forms out of nowhere, and they beat the LOD on a house show, and the Natural Disasters turn face.
Yeah.
So I think that was the reason for the kind of goofy booking here, where, no one was really put over and no one was really... It was just protection all around. Because the plan was always for the LOD to win the belts back. But it never happened.
But as far as it happening in Denver, a rush job on a house show, supposedly that was because Road Warrior Hawk failed a drug test and they were being punished for it. So
was it?
We were in a period of weird booking here. So that may have been ad hoc as far as Money Inc. even coming together in the first place. Because keep in mind, Money Inc. did not exist before that title match. It was Ted DiBiase and IRS won the titles, and subsequently they became.
Yeah, and then
Money
they did
Inc.
the thing like Jimmy Hart. It was that was supposed to be the Natural Disaster shot. They turned face, and then you wound up with Natural Disasters Money Inc.
I don't know that any
LOD came back with Paul Ellering, and that didn't really work. And then
Rocco.
Yeah, well, I wasn't going to reference that, but okay. And then the one crown jewel of this undercard, though.
If you want to call it that.
Yeah, I guess Diamond in the Rough. How about that?
Yeah.
Is Roddy Piper winning his first and only singles title in WWF, the Intercontinental title being the Mountie, the ultimate transitional champion. This was the only pay-per-view that Bret Hart ever missed in his career, I believe, at least before the monthly pay-per-views came in 97 when he would get hurt.
Right.
But in 96, I guess, when he left for a while.
Right.
He was both injured. I don't know if he was injured or if it was a contract dispute at this time, or maybe a little of both. But they had beaten him at a house show.
Yeah.
God, they had done a lot of title changes at house shows around here.
Really,
the Mountie won it. Piper came out to remember, and so because originally this was supposed to be Bret Hart versus the Mountie at this show.
Well,
but then Mountie wins the belt. Piper came out to do something like defend Bret because they did a thing where Bret was sick or something and he still took the match on with a 100-degree fever. And so this match became Mountie Piper impromptu. And Piper won it. So basically, and in the end, it all worked out because Piper wound up putting Bret over in a very rare clean job for him at WrestleMania.
I've argued that 92 is the screwiest year in company history and that 92, 93. As far as trying to follow it, you know, even month to month might be the weirdest two-year period they've ever had because later that year, Bret Hart, Coliseum home video cameras were capturing it at this house show in Saskatchewan where Bret Hart won the WWF title from Ric Flair.
And
everything was ad hoc.
And Ric Flair beat Savage at a house show. They did a lot of house show.
Although that was on Superstars, I think, but still.
Oh, was it?
Yeah, it was. But it was so weird. It was so weird.
Were they trying to, like, get house... Because house shows were dying at this point.
Well,
were they trying to drum up business? Or
no, here's what it was.
I know there was a lot of just things blowing up in their face.
Well, and they needed to move titles around, but today we would, okay, well, we'll just do it at the September pay-per-view. There was no September pay-per-view. So this is what you do when you don't have these things to fall back upon. It was weird. They took it off Bret Hart. There have been rumors, I think fairly substantiated.
That he was going to jump to on a Clash
WCW
of Champions.
He was going to show up with the
Intercontinental title.
Yeah, exactly. You know, I don't know if he was going to drop it in a trash can or not, but that still would have been damaging. Either way, so
that was
a great
Clash show, by the way, Clash 18.
It was pretty good.
It's one of the better Clashes.
It really was. Well, anything that ends up with Missy Hyatt going in a barrel of cold water,
which I think was a rib, I'm assuming,
probably. And let's stipulate anything that has Missy Hyatt circa 92 going in a barrel of cold water. No offense to a past lounge guest, by the way, but this was a big pop for
Piper.
A screwy deal, yeah. With having it on Mountie, Mountie and Piper was not a good match, but it did set up. I don't know if
Nor was it supposed to be. I mean, let's be honest. Right. Who the hell thought the Mountie was going over here?
Right.
I think the densest mark knew that who was winning here.
Mountie and Piper, again, that ended up being Piper's first title of any kind in the WWF. It set him up in a passion.
Or did he win a tag team? Well, singles, I should say, because wasn't he like tag team champion?
Him and
Ric
Flair in like 05, I think. Yeah. Throwaway. I think they were the ones to finally beat the Spirit Squad. Instead of like having it be, or 06, then it would have been, I guess.
Yeah, I think you're right.
Yeah, like let's not use it to make anybody. Let's use it to give it to Flair and Piper. But the whole thing, too, and I want to say this to make the macro point before we get into the Rumble match. As much as I criticized Piper in 91, and I thought it was the worst announcing job I've ever heard on a pay-per-view, Monsoon Heenan, they're noted for doing a great job in this match. We all remember the Fair to Flair bombs. All throughout, their announcing was awesome. Heenan kept referencing back. Piper has a chance to become the first man ever to win two titles in one day. Their announcing certainly elevated the Rumble match beyond even what it was, but the card as a whole benefited. There was an urgency from them, even in the undercard matches, that meant nothing. And really, nothing meant anything except for the Piper-Mountie IC match. Maybe to a certain extent the tag team title match, but the booking there was so convoluted. The way that they elevated everything with the urgency they were bringing, I don't know if they were on speed that day or whatever it was, but I've never felt a card that was as jarring going one year to the next in terms of announcing dragging it down so far, announcing pulling it up so far.
Yeah, I mean, Heenan was great during this time period in general, but this was his finest hour.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, obviously Ric Flair was his finest hour too, but, you know, Heenan does a great job in this. He makes it really entertaining. It's really fun to listen. For someone like me who's watched this thing 100 times, I can, just like focus on Bobby Heenan's commentary and like laugh.
Yeah.
And it's good enough to get me through it again. But let's talk about this Rumble, shall we?
Yep. Here we go.
One of eight matches in WWE history I've given the Magic 5-star rating to.
Okay.
Quite simply, it's the best Rumble ever. I don't think it's debatable at all. I mean, there are debates. No. There are debates on what's the best WrestleMania ever. There are debates on certainly like best SummerSlam, best match, whatever.
But you've got to go to second best Rumble to start having a debate, basically.
No, I do not see, you know, it's to the point now where I think you see a lot of these people, what's the best Rumble ever? And everyone's like, well, I'll go with the obvious pick, it's 92. You know, people almost have to like just try to be like a contrarian for the hell of it to say, I know everyone says 92, but let's consider this. And it's always like, no, you're stop it.
Can I throw one thing at you looking at it back from 23-year-old eyes from when it happened? We talked today about, ultimately, even if you believe all the rumors, there's only three or four guys who could win it then. How many guys ultimately could have won this one? It's still a relatively short list.
Sure, but, you know, they were kept in all till the end.
Yeah, true.
And here's the thing. When we started this journey here in the Rumble, and you can go back and listen to part 1A, when we give some criteria on out, let's follow through on this.
That's where you want to go for all the background.
Let's follow through on this.
Yep.
Things we look for. Did the right guy go over?
Yeah.
Was there some kind of creative, was there creativity and innovation throughout the match? Did it flow well? This had that, but the star power is a big contributing factor to this being the best Rumble ever.
Right.
It just had all the big, because now Flair's in it. Sid is in this thing. The Undertaker's an established name. You just had so many. And there are some dogs like Skinner and Repo Man. Like you
right.
But the star power here was unbelievable. But here's the thing, and I wrote this down. Here's why I don't think this can be touched as a Rumble. You have the dynamic of being for the world title itself.
Mm-hmm.
With the star power I just referenced. And then the flag bearer for the rival promotion from mm-hmm. for the entire last decade, that being Ric Flair, coming in, he was still relatively new. He'd come in, you know, like, what, late August, early September.
Yeah.
This is somebody's been in for, like, you know, 4 full months at this point, but still he's relatively new. Coming in, doing his shtick.
Yep.
Make no mistake about it. This was Ric Flair doing his shtick, getting over doing it, and looking better than all of the WWF flag bearers.
Yeah,
it's impossible to duplicate.
Kind of as it went further along, kind of like half-assed outsider booking. I mean, he's captaining a Survivor Series team,
Jabron. Yeah, me and my old tag team partner, he made that too. Yes,
yeah.
Could Flair's? It's kind of funny that in retrospect, you know, I liked Flair's first run in WWF. I did.
Uh-huh.
Could it have been done better? Absolutely.
Yes.
You know, it's funny that there's this thing, oh, Hogan Flair, it wasn't worth doing at WrestleMania. It didn't draw as well as expected. Yet, keep in mind, it's the same program that really brought WCW from the ashes.
Yes.
So keep that. So don't tell me that Hogan Flair didn't have some value.
Right.
But here's the thing. I recognize that I'm talking about just in a vacuum, this match.
Yes.
Yes, Ric Flair's, as the outsider, could have been handled better.
Yes.
But this is the highlight of the run.
Clearly.
Without doubt. This is him being Ric Flair,
yep.
getting over as Ric Flair.
Yep.
Okay, yeah, he was a captain of Survivor Series. That shouldn't have happened.
Yeah.
You could make an argument they should have done Hogan Flair at Survivor Series to set this thing up.
That's my argument, yeah.
Because it still would have been a hot match.
Yeah.
And apparently they never had any intention of doing it at WrestleMania because Sid was promised the closing match at WrestleMania when
he jumped. Somebody making the argument to me that Hogan Flair was too big for Survivor Series and that WrestleMania was too far away. I'm like, look,
I didn't say that, did I?
No, I don't think it was
things.
You.
Okay.
But I'm going, the lesser of two evils. I agree that match was too big for anything but WrestleMania at the time, but you couldn't hold off till WrestleMania.
Yeah.
But you do it at Survivor Series. You bite the bullet. You don't waste it on house shows, for God's sake.
Yeah, I mean, well, whatever. It's easy to say with 20 years of retrospect,
right.
But anyway.
Well, I was saying it at the time, but that's okay.
Oh, you were?
Yeah, don't do it on house
okay.
shows.
Okay, sure. So here's the thing. It's funny. Meltzer like ripped on this when they had Flair on this Royal Rumble panel a few months ago.
Uh-huh.
By the way, if you're listening to this, folks, in some sort of weird time warp, we're recording this in the year 2015.
Yes.
So, you know, like Byron Saxton's like, oh, you know, that really, you know, Meltzer scoffed at like that dumb Byron Saxton saying, oh, winning the Rumble really established you as one of the greats of all time. And okay, maybe that is silly and like Flair was already one of the greats.
Sure.
But to me and to a lot of people, this did cement. Like, there was no denying after this match that Ric Flair was the greatest professional wrestler of all time. Because not only did he come in and get over doing his shtick, we have the first backlash against Hulk Hogan in the same match.
Well, here's the thing, too. And you could make the case of. In terms of tiers, we talk about tiers in sports and also here in good old wrestling. If you're going to make the case about Flair, and I'd say that he was on the Thez level already, but like going from the level below of like Jack Briscoe, Bob Backlund, whatever, to the level of Thez and whoever else, that's the only way you could ever say that Flair was elevated. And I'd say that Flair was on that tier already.
Yeah, no, he was. I mean, there an argument could have made that he was the greatest of all time.
Yeah.
Going into the match. But this, like, when you watch this.
Yeah.
Like, this is the thing that, and it's funny that people who didn't watch WCW NWA going in, like, you know, people who are like, oh, I've heard of Ric Flair, but I didn't mm-hmm. watch. I only watched WWF. In some regards, I was kind of like that. I didn't watch a lot of NWA, WCW.
I was always an NWA guy, first and foremost.
Okay, I just had the thing with me is I only could control the TV for so long, and I just watched all WWF. So
Ronnie Garvin was big at my school, as you can tell from listening to me on his shows.
Jesus Christ.
He was bigger than Hulk Hogan at Valley Forge High School. I'll tell you that flat out.
What the hell were they smoking at Valley Forge High School?
But
that's not a rhetorical question,
okay.
By the way.
Yeah. So, but there's certain people who, like, they watch this, like, wow, is this Ric Flair guy? There's just no disputing watching this that Ric Flair is not just this unbelievable performer. And we talk about kind of the way that Slaughter was put over,
yeah,
as the world to win the world title the year before, and how just screwy that was.
In very weak fashion.
Heels never in this era got put over like Ric Flair did.
Right.
Like, he just goes coast to coast. He's the star of the match. And it's just, it's so great to watch. Like, he, even guys who had no business really, you know, getting much mentioned, like Greg Valentine or Texas Tornado.
Yeah.
He made their, you know, minuscule time in the match seem kind of important because everyone would gun for him. And it's just, from start to finish, it is by far. You talk about tiers,
yeah,
for Royal Rumbles. This is alone on a tier. The second best Rumble is not close to this.
Nowhere close. And, you know, Valentine at one point in the spot, because, again, he was also master of the figure four, puts him in the figure four. It would have been nice to hear a callback to their legendary Mid-Atlantic team from the late
70s. They're not
going to
mention
that. I would have liked to have had that happen.
They're not going to say that.
But
another company existed. They're not going to talk about that.
Well, exactly. I will say this. That in terms of it being a team effort to make this match what it was, the thing with Flair, obviously, the thing with Heenan, obviously, this was peak Gorilla in terms of as an announcer, and he had an ability to be carried like wrestlers under the right circumstances. His giving credit to the devil, giving the devil his due repeatedly through the course of the match as Flair kept going is one of the things that really, again, elevated it as well. And where it put the imprimatur of the company behind Flair in a real, real way. Because Gorilla Monsoon didn't do that to heels.
No, he didn't. And so let's talk about the match. Go through the match kind of generally. Compared to other Rumble, there's just really no dead spots here. The first third or so of the match is, you know, it's Flair and Davey Boy kind of running concurrently. They're both in, and they're like, wow, these guys are starting, you know.
Yep.
They're like, wow, these guys are both in there, and Flair's really carrying that first third to half of the match.
Yeah.
It ends with a bunch of guys going out and Flair flops in the middle of the ring all by himself, and Roddy Piper comes out.
Yep.
And then comes the next part. You know, you get Jake Roberts in there, and they do that great little segment, the three of them where they all take turns turning on each other.
Yep.
Heenan's unbelievable on commentary. Piper comes to Flair's aid. He's like, I never thought I'd say this, but thank you, Roddy Piper.
Uh-huh.
It's a kilt. It's a kilt. It's not a skirt.
Yeah.
And then Piper hits Flair. He's like, you no good skirt wearing freak. That's outstanding. And then let's go to the end. So, you know, it builds, and then as the match progresses, it's like, wow, Flair's still in this. So they did a great thing when Flair comes out at number three.
Uh-huh.
Monsoon's teasing Heenan. He's like, you can kiss a goodbye, Brain. No one who's ever drawn a top of first five numbers ever been left at the end.
Yep.
And, you know, there are some, I've seen some of these people, and I'm assuming there are people who were not watching the product at that time saying, oh, it was pretty obvious that Ric Flair was going to win this. Wrong, 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 wrong. In this era, the idea of Hulk Hogan not winning was unthinkable.
Right.
I watched this one night in college. So it would have been years after, like 10 years, almost 10 years after the fact,
uh-huh,
with people who had never seen it before.
Mm-hmm.
And they just assumed Hulk Hogan was going to win.
Oh, okay.
So the idea that Hulk Hogan wasn't going to win a match, which it just didn't – it just he always won, which
right,
was part of the problem. People got sick of him. But – so I think that it's just a wrong viewpoint that it was – like, all right, now because you know he wins, okay, maybe. It was never – when it got down, you talked about, oh, okay, well, there's only so many guys who could win this.
Right.
Man – when they had this down to, like, the final six or eight, they had all six or eight of those guys over.
Sid was a credible guy.
Savage, who didn't do much in this, granted, but he's a former world champion.
Yeah.
Piper, they were giving the big push to. Could he win both titles in a night? Which wasn't going to happen, but it was, you know, Martel was had lasted 50 minutes. the previous, whatever that was worth. I'm kind of grasping
straws
there.
He sort of stuck out from there. 18-month former AWA world champion, well, though, that although wasn't gonna be mentioned. I would have liked to have heard that mentioned.
Well, of
but.
Course you would have. Jesus Christ. I mean, I would have liked to get a blowjob when I watched the match, too. Okay? I mean, but I was 12 years old. All right? So, Flair, and it's building more and more heat, Flair staying in there.
Yeah.
When Hogan comes out, you do feel, you know, it's kind of like, damn it, I hope Hogan doesn't ruin this.
Right.
You know, even to this day when I watch it, I'm like, God, thank God, I'm so glad Hogan didn't win.
Well, you know what? You know what reinforces that, too, was the whole thing with The Undertaker and then Tuesday in Texas after the Survivor Series. There was the sense that Hogan had already stubbed his toe and was getting his title back. Because
yes.
Hogan tended not, if he ever stubbed his toe, it was only ever momentary. And there was the sense that the company knew that he'd been on top for so long and didn't want to make him look weak. So there was every reason from a smart mark perspective to think it was going to go that
way.
Oh,
yeah. Like, if you're like if this was in the internet, you're everyone like, please tell me Hogan doesn't win. Please tell me. And then the
yeah.
And it's funny that you didn't have that, really, and yet you got the reaction you did at the end of the match.
Yeah.
So, you know, Heenan had some great digs in this on Virgil. And you know, oh, Virgil's number 23, huh? Like, it's 22 guys' bags he got to go through.
Yeah.
Jesus, can you imagine saying that on TV now? But so in the end,
that's right up there with his down payment on a ghetto blaster
yes.
blast.
a boombox.
Boombox.
Yes. So the final four, you got Flair, Hogan, Savage, Sid. Best final four ever.
Yep.
In terms of start, because any of the four, you're thinking, Sid, they really put over strong at the end of the match. He was eliminating
yes.
everyone. And it comes, Savage kind of goes without a whimper, and it's down to Flair, Hogan, Sid, and they do the big spot where Sid turns on Hogan, although he really didn't, like, it's funny because they went back and did some post-editing. Like,
sure.
Oh, how dare Sid do this to his friend? When really, it was not that heelish of a move. It was an every man for himself
yeah.
match. He dumps Hogan. Crowd is very audibly pleased live.
Yes.
There was a big pop when Sid tosses Hogan.
Yep.
I don't care what anyone wants to say. That's not a smart mark thing. Watch the match. And it's
right.
And they don't have the what do they call that when they re-edit things?
Well, post-production. I watched that on the network, which I think didn't have the post-production.
It doesn't, but like
yeah.
the Coliseum video, I think they tuned it down.
Yeah.
You know, kind of Roman Reigns style.
Oh,
but
yeah.
They didn't do that there.
These techniques are not new, kids.
Yes, and then Flair gets the win, and he cuts the unbelievable promo afterwards. And then the crowd has – it's the first backlash against Hulkamania when it's Hogan and Sid there.
Yeah.
In the ring afterwards.
Hogan does the sore loser thing. He pulls Sid out to give the match to Flair.
Which didn't do him any favors.
Well, and the crowd kept booing.
Yeah, and, you know, I think that was the first sign that, you know, we talked about in 89. Oh,
yeah.
God, this was, you know, today no one would be taking Hogan's side.
Right.
This was the first time, like, no, why are we going to cheer for you? That was kind of a dick move. You pulled
right.
the guy out after you were tossed.
It's either every man for himself or it's not.
Yeah, and it's Hogan. It was clear that people didn't just look past things because it was Hogan anymore.
Right.
And there was another thing where Sid drops to his knees and does the, you know, give me the accolades, and the crowd
uh-huh.
gives him the accolades.
Yeah. That should have been a warning sign right there. There were a couple other things I thought that were worth mentioning during the match as well. I found it interesting that it's the first Rumble that had a number of guys who a cup of coffee later would be in WCW. Greg Valentine, Hercules, Barbarian, all guys that would be on the landscape with the other company within a few months. Kind of weird. We were right on the verge of that purge they were having.
Yeah, I think Haku, this was kind of his swan. There were a lot of guys who was their swan, even if they didn't go to WCW.
Yeah.
You know, Texas Tornado didn't last much longer after this.
Yeah, he was in there, and that, again, this is the greatest match ever for star power in terms of the total historical continuum of guys who had been established, guys who would be established.
Like Shawn Michaels.
The Undertaker was in the midst of being established, Shawn Michaels. And the thing that I thought was interesting, too, I don't know if you remember this, there were some Michaels Flair segments in there. And it was like
yes.
a thing where, like, if you look at it through the eyes of 2008, very, very interesting. And I guarantee you, there's nobody in that company. Whoever was the highest on Shawn Michaels in that company
had no idea.
Had no idea that Michaels and Flair.
He had just turned.
Yeah.
He had just
yeah.
turned. And drew some pretty good heat when he came out for that turn.
Yes.
Obviously, it's one of those famous heel turns everyone he throws
exactly.
to the window.
Yeah, with the barbershop window. And they played the thing on the pay-per-view because it had just happened. I have mentioned this, too, how jarring it can be to watch these consecutively, 91 and 92. Savage, boy, Savage in 91, biggest war criminal ever. Savage in 92, biggest cuddly baby face ever. I understand it, and the storytelling through the year was perfect, but just watching the events in a vacuum. Plus, not only that, 91, oh, the troops, the troops, the troops. In 92, boy, if you didn't know anything about world affairs, you'd be like, hey, how'd that war go? Because they were talking about the troops a year ago and nothing about them this year. I guess the war must have gone pretty well. We must have won because they're not talking about our troops anymore. The only other thing, too, amazing highlight package at the end because, of course, Where's My Thing was used as the music behind it. So that, to me, is the greatest thing ever. Yeah. When I watched it again on the WWE Network, I marked out. I'm like, yes, I remember this from when it happened. I remember that they played Where's My Thing as the music behind it. I was just losing it, Kyle. Didn't you find that augmented the whole thing, took it to another level?
I didn't remember that. I told you I didn't need to rewatch it.
You're not quite the Rush guy that I am, but, you know, still, that was just amazing. Rush should be used as highlight music on all pay-per-views, quite frankly. But the fact that they did it there was nothing short of perfection. Just like the entire show. Well,
just like the match.
I'm still saying 4.25 stars because I don't know that I can give a Rumble match as much as I give a regular match. I know you're saying 5.
I think that it's funny that I kind of used to have that respect of, oh, it's a battle royal, whatever.
I'm still there.
I don't have boundaries like that. To me, I like started watching this again I rewatched mm-hmm. it a couple times like when I was in college and uh-huh. hadn't seen it in a while. And I'm sitting there watching, like, why isn't this one of the greatest considered one of the greatest matches in company history? Because I think it is.
Well, now it is. And I don't think it is.
I think no one likes this match as much as I do.
You're not on some of the Smart Mark boards like DVDVR and PWO like I am. I assure you, brother, because I do a lot of lurking. Yeah.
Oh, good. Good
you're,
for that.
You're
then.
Not alone. Now, I don't know if, you know, that entire neckbeard community is who you want validating you, but, you know, be that as it may.
I don't, you know, well, in that case, I'll take the validation.
Okay.
Of 90s matches, uh-huh. I have this number 3.
Wow.
Only Bret Austin, Michaels, Taker, Hell in the Cell better than this.
I'm trying to think of what else I would query you about. So you're, so neither of your beloved WrestleMania 10 matches would be.
Those would be 4 and 5.
Oh, okay. Okay. All right. And I think you probably said that during the WrestleMania anthology that I forgot that. So, all right, well,
I did too.
Okay.
Sometimes I go back and listen to things I say.
Yeah, it happens. But again, you know, you naming 29 out of 30 is almost sort of a metaphor for how great this show was
and how much I love it. Yeah, I mean, yeah. It really is, and I don't think that we'll ever have a Rumble this good again. Especially considering the way that the event's gone in recent years.
Right.
It has. I mean, there has never been a time where I even had to think, is this close to as good as 92? There are some, and we're years away from them,
yeah,
that were real good, but none have even approached this.
Let me ask you this. Wouldn't it have to be the same circumstances in terms of a vacant title? And here's why I'm going to ask you this.
No, here's the thing. Okay, go ahead.
Let me set this up because I don't think you've considered this. Because if you didn't have a vacant title that they were fighting for, that means you've already got a champion. That means you already know one half of the main event at WrestleMania. To have the same level of suspense at the end of the match, you'd have to wonder who the champion is and who the challenger at WrestleMania is going
to
be.
I'm the kind of guy, though, when you try to reconstruct a dynamic, it's just not as good as it was the first time.
Then there's no way. Would you agree with me?
Short I don't know, that, but here's the thing.
There's no way. You couldn't do it with a champion established. You couldn't. It would just. Then it's just another thing of,
I don't know. You never say never because the great matches are things you don't see coming.
Yeah. But, you know, even in 2015, it was
I don't know what you could do. I mean, look, the Rumble's been around now. You know, it's funny that we've only gone through 5 years, so there's so many new things we're going to see that have yet to come.
Yeah.
At this point, it's still a relatively new gimmick.
Right.
So the idea, here's what's funny. Flair, glad we kind of went in this direction here.
Mm-hmm.
Flair coming in at number 3 and winning the thing
mm-hmm.
is, like, at the time was insane.
Yeah.
Now it's not. because we've seen other guys
now
do
it's
it.
A trope. Now it's a thing of like this year we're going to have a guy go long.
Yeah,
and
for
do
a while
that.
It became way overplayed, and I was almost getting upset about it.
They did it,
like,
Benoit in 04.
Yeah, Ben. I mean, yeah, and then
now they had a lot. They had
06,
a long...
06, it really got on my nerves. But there's got to be something that they haven't done in a Rumble yet. That if the match is really good, and then they do something at the end that maybe I don't know. Maybe like I don't know what the thing is.
Yeah,
but it's one of those things that you would never see coming. But if they did another Royal Rumble where the title was up for grabs, it's probably not going to be this good because I don't think they'll be able to get the star power.
Well, and not only that, it's a thing where if you did it where there was an established champion
because
already,
who's the Ric Flair then in the next instance?
I mean,
there's no guy. The fact that Flair did his NWA shtick on WWF TV is a huge part of the dynamic, and that you can't do that. There's no one like that. I mean, I don't know. What are you going to do? Like, have – I mean, you can't say, oh, you know, like, you know, Samoa Joe comes in and starts doing, you know, indie-rific moves. That's not going to get over as much as Flair.
If it was an 06, it might have been a different story. But
it would not have been as big as Flair.
No, it wouldn't have been. It wouldn't have been because I don't think they would have allowed it to be. But, yeah, I mean, there's any number of things here that, you know, can account for the fact that, you know, this was Haley's Comet. We will Haley's Comet's actually, what, every 76 years, and we will never see the 1992 Royal Rumble ever replicated. Kind of sad because we still have a lot of history to get through.
I know. That makes all the next couple parts not seem as fun.
Oh, but, you know, as I've said to you off air, some of the best stuff with SNS was the negativity at the time. So 93 to 97, I think, is going to be fun because we're just going to be blasting away, man.
It's called the down years.
Yep.
For not just for the company, but for the Royal Rumble itself.
Yep. Well, look forward to that, folks, because as we're taping this today, we're nowhere near on the horizon. I mean, I don't mean 5 years out, but I mean, like, I haven't even watched 93 to 97 yet. So as you hear part five of this one, hopefully by that point we'll be on the verge of it, but we're not as we tape this today. Looking forward to the next part, even though it is the down years. Thank you for joining us.
As we bring the show to a close, we would like to extend our deepest gratitude to NBC, CBS, ABC, Fox, All Clear Channel affiliates, TNT, TBS, USA, UPN, Deadspin.com, YouTube.com, YTMND.com, MySpace.com, various blogs, Fox News, CNN, CNBC, MSNBC, IamBored.com, Billboard.com, Google.com, ESPN, ESPN2, ESPN News, ESPN Classics, NBA TV, NFL Network, Sports Time Ohio, Athlon Magazine, Comedy Central, Cartoon Network, The Boomerang Channel, QVC, BET, The Spice Channel, Steno Notebooks, Manwich, Papermate Office Supplies, Waitresses, Strippers, Bartenders, Garbage Men, Janitors, Microwave Popcorn, The Writers of The Office, Scrubs, Entourage, My Name is Earl, Oz, Metalocalypse and the Boondocks, Aquafina, and The Periodic Table of Elements.